Chapter 8. A titanium rune-forged blade, with pyromantic sharpening and recursive honing enchantments, said Gorm, reverently holding the battle-axe. He could feel the sorcery hum within the weapon as he tested the weight of it. Magically calibrated haft-balancing with a strength-enhancing shoulder, trademarked thunderstrike axe-head, and a drake-skin comfort-fit grip.
I can see I'm dealing with a dwarf of discriminating taste, said the man behind the counter of the weapons store, a wholly-owned subsidiary of the General Store Incorporated.
Gorm smiled and set the enchanted blade on the counter.
I pick up a little here and there, he said with false modesty.
Niln stood next to him, clearly attempting to conceal his ignorance with the most thoughtful and focused expression he could muster. It wasn't working. Gorm thought the high scribe looked like he was sick in the bowels, and it was still plain as day that he didn't have a clue what he was looking at.
How much does it cost? Niln asked.
He tried to heft the axe, failed, and settled for testing its edge instead.
1,000 gilton, said the clerk. 1,000? Ow! Do be careful, sir, said the clerk, wiping the blade clean with a little cloth. It's very sharp.
Niln sucked the tip of his bleeding thumb and glared at them both.
Will you be purchasing the axe then, sir? The clerk asked Gorm. Or perhaps some time with the training golems would help you make your decision.
Nay, said Gorm. I'd wager you'd have to be rank 4 before the Heroes Guild would let you use that axe.
5, said the clerk.
Well, either way you slice it, I ain't got the ranks. Not any more.
A pity, sir. You held it well.
A pity for sure, but the guild does as it must. If you let just anyone off the street wield enchanted weapons, well, you know what would happen.
Gorm and the clerk both looked at Niln, who was still attempting to stanch his bleeding thumb.
Indeed, sir, said the clerk. He offered Gorm a short sword. Perhaps you would consider a sword of truth.
Gorm took the blade and gave it a thorough examination.
What's it do?
It glows white hot whenever you have an epiphany,
explained the clerk.
Ain't sure how often that happens in the heat of battle, said Gorm. How much you asking?
800 gilton.
800, snorted Gorm. This thing's overpriced.
The sword flared with a white light as Gorm set it back on the counter.
No, I think a couple of vials of blade flame for old reliable will do it for me weapon, said Gorm, patting his old axe.
Certainly, sir.
The clerk made a small note on the hero's tally sheet, which was growing rather long.
Anything else?
What have you got for armor?
I think you'll be quite pleased with the newest full plate, sir, offered the clerk. Made with true light steel and forged with crystals harvested from snow elemental hearts. Doesn't smother you like the old full plate models. Guaranteed to stay cool and breathable in battle.
Party's not running any heavy duty, said Gorm. More of a skirmishing outfit.
With 2 mages. Who takes the punishment?
Well, hopefully the other guy, joked Gorm.
He and the clerk shared a good laugh.
Well said, sir. We do have a chainmail model from the same line, very resilient, and a padded leather interior.
You've got me attention, said Gorm.
The clerk nodded and headed out back. Niln and Gorm watched the other heroes moving through the store, browsing racks that bristled with every sort of weapon imaginable. Laruna and Jin hovered around a collection of staves. Heraldin was experimenting with glass globes that burst into brightly colored clouds when thrown to the ground. Gaist stood, arms crossed, in front of a huge rack of knives and swords, while Katha browsed through a collection of bows. Gleebeck roamed aimlessly throughout the store, followed by an uproar of sound and light as weapons sang, leaped, lit a flame, and glowed various colors whenever the goblin walked too close.
"What was it you and the clerk were discussing?" said Niln. "About running heavily or being punished?"
"Oh, that! We don't have anyone in heavy armor to get in close and keep a monster busy while the mages kill it," said Gorm. "Instead, we have a ranger and thief."
"Bard!"
yelled Heraldin from across the store.
"Which basically fills the same job twice," Gorm continued. "It's your standard hammer and anvil arrangement, except we're all hammer."
"It's not just about filling jobs," said Niln. "We were chosen by the All-Mother. We are all here for a reason."
"Well, unless that reason is to die as a spectacular example of how not to pursue a career in professional heroics, I suggest we gear up. And seeing as we're likely headed for the Mirewood, we'll want armor that's venom and water-resistant. Maybe some flaming weapons, that sort of thing."
"I've heard it said that gear does not make the hero."
"Aye, but gear does make the hero live longer," said Gorm.
"If you say so," said Niln's voice. His face very clearly said, "But it's not supposed to be this way."
Gorm remembered seeing the world through similar lenses. There was a time when he once thought heroes could set out from home with little more than a walking stick and a plucky attitude, and return a few short years later stronger, wiser, and rich enough to bleed silver. Back then, he thought character and perseverance brought a hero through a quest, rather than flaming weapons or enchanted armor. But those dreams died quickly in the world of professional heroics, as did the adventurers who held on to such ideals too tightly. He put a hand on Niln's shoulder.
"You're still thinking like it's a story, lad," he said. "This ain't a legend. It's a job. A career. You need to set aside your ideas about what should be and start thinking about it like a professional. Quests succeed and fail now, lad. Right now, before the heroes are on the road. Because a party of heroes is like a gnomish flame cannon. Give it the right chemistry, point it in the right direction, and it'll do wonders. Do any one part wrong, and the whole thing blows up in your face."
Gorm waved a hand out at the retail armory.
"This here is the chemistry part. This is where you get the right team filling the right roles and wearing the right gear. It's all got to come together in this strange alchemy that fuses a small mob of sellswords into a company of heroes."
Niln struggled to take in the advice. "I will try to learn," he managed. The clerk returned with a fine suit of chainmail. The armor felt light and comfortable when he tried it on, but it was strong enough to shatter the fist of a training golem that punched it. Gorm added it to the pile of purchases the other heroes were heaping upon the counter. The clerk hummed happily as he made an additional note on the hero's tally sheet.
"And I suppose you're expecting me to ensure that the temple sees to the bill," Niln said to Gorm.
Gorm grinned.
"Well, we're all here for a reason."
Laruna tried to act naturally as she made her way through the aisles of the general store. Katha hadn't given her any reason not to be comfortable, after all. Laruna had met many famous heroes, and a few had been as down-to-earth as the elf seemed to be. Still, this was the Jade Wind, the ranger who had helped clear the Temple of Elemental Unpleasantness, the scourge of the slave lords of the White Sea, the heroine who brought down the Duchess of Jackals. In her heyday, the Jade Wind had been a legend, even among her peers. And now, she was standing just down the aisle from Laruna, loading a market basket with vials from a sheaf of health potions. How could Laruna not be nervous?
"That's a lot of healing potions," Laruna said, immediately cursing her awkwardness under her breath.
The ranger glanced at her and shrugged.
"You have to be prepared in the field. Accidents and ambushes happen." "Buying anything else?"
Katha glanced through her basket.
"Just a poor man's quiver," she said, pulling out a plain leather quiver with a single protruding arrow. "Why do they call it a poor man's quiver?"
"Two reasons," said the elf. She drew the arrow from the quiver and set it on the shelf, and then nodded back to the quiver.
"Wow," said Laruna. "It's always got one arrow," said Katha, drawing forth the quiver's lone arrow.
Another lone arrow sprouted behind it.
"That's some expensive enchantment," whistled Laruna. "That's the other reason it's called a poor man's quiver. After you've bought one, you're poor."
The elf nodded to Niln, who was up at the weapons counter with Gorm.
"Professional tip, always buy your best gear on a well-financed project."
"Good idea," said Laruna.
Emboldened by camaraderie, she added,
"I'm sorry if you get sick of hearing this, but can I just say that I'm a great admirer of your work. Any pointers you can give me are much appreciated."
Katha seemed to scrutinize her for a moment, though it was common for elves to do so. As strange as the fair folk often seemed to humans, Laruna reminded herself that from an elven perspective, humans seemed remarkably difficult to keep track of. One of her elven professors at the academy had frequently mistaken Laruna's classmate for his ancestors.
"Don't let anybody take advantage of you," said Katha eventually.
"Excuse me?
You're young. You still have that sparkle in your eye, that drive to go out and save the day and let the rest sort itself out. But when you think like that, people can take advantage."
The elf got a distant look in her eye.
"Employers want your services, agents want a cut of your pay, companies want your image to sell their products. And men want, well, what men always want. If you're not careful, you give yourself away for less than you're worth. You trust people that you shouldn't. You play with fire, and you get burned."
The ranger shook her head and gave Laruna a small smile.
"That's my tip. Don't get burned."
"Oh, I usually don't get burned," said Laruna, "in any sense of the word. I was more looking for things like fighting advice and keys to advancement.
Oh, that.
Just survive. Live through enough quests and you'll rank up. For a strong heroine with your kind of magic, that's the easy part. But if you do that long enough, eventually you learn that your job isn't about being self-sufficient in the wild, or defending the weak, or the pursuit of justice. Really, we just kill things for money. And when that finally starts to sink in, you face the hard part of professional heroics, the big questions.
The big questions?
Yeah, is there more to life than just killing and looting? Are we more than just numbers in some guildmaster's ledger, statistics written on our license? And the big one, the one that haunts you every night on the job. Why are we doing this anyway?
Why are we doing this anyway? Haraldin asked.
We're following a lead, said Gorm.
He led the other heroes through the back alleys of Sculpin Down, a craggy slum shrouded in the shadow of the ridge.
I thought the lead pointed us to the Mirewood, said Caitha.
That would probably be preferable, said Jin, stepping over a figure slumped in the street.
"Well, the smell wouldn't be so bad," said Haraldin. Sculpin Down had an unenviable position, sitting just above the stream where the stockyard waste met the city sewers. The sorcerous devices employed by the League of Sewer Workers kept most of the district merely unpleasant, but small faults in the system left pockets of stench powerful enough to bring tears to the eyes.
"We follow all our leads," said Gorm, shrugging off their complaints.
He'd never worked in a party of heroes that could entirely agree on what to have for breakfast, let alone how to complete a quest. Managing egos was as much a part of the job as slaying monsters, and often far less pleasant. The other heroes could gripe and complain until they were bluer than a slaw in summer, so long as they got in line. They walked along one of Sculpin Down's fouler alleys, which teemed with unsavory characters. The beggars carried daggers here. Glowing eyes watched from every corner. Gorm tried asking for help finding one of each Magrash, but his inquiries earned him little but sneers and snarls from retreating figures. A coven of three omnimancers walked by, drawing dark looks from Jin and Laruna. Mages of the Twilight Order had sided with the Sten in ancient ages, and they had been all but wiped out for it. Now the Third Order of Wizardry was nothing but an informal gathering of those mages cursed with the ability to touch both Solemnancy and Noctomancy, but without the decency to suppress it. The alleyway opened up into a small cobblestone square with a broken fountain at the center. Even for the late hour, the square seemed preternaturally empty. Its only inhabitant was an old man in black robes who sat near an alcove carved into the base of the next tier up, laughing sporadically. A blood-red light flickered behind him, casting ominous shadows in the falling twilight.
"Where are you going?" Niln asked when Gorm started crossing the square.
"To see if he knows where Megrash is," Gorm said.
The man in the distance cackled.
"So long!" he screeched to himself. "Off you go! I bet you didn't see that coming!"
"You don't set much of a standard for whom you'll seek out for advice, do you?" said Haraldin.
"Of course I do. You just don't meet it."
Gorm headed toward the strange man. The red light turned out to be coming from a statue set within the alcove. It was a granite representation of a skeleton seated on a small chair, its fleshless hands steepled beneath its lipless grin, a shrine of Mordo Og, the god of death. Tiny crimson pinpoints intermittently flared within the skull's eye sockets, prompting hoots of delight and comments from the robed man. It took a special kind of person to serve the Lord of the End, the same variety that made undertakers smile politely and edge toward the door.
"There goes another one,"
the man told Gorm as the sculpture's eyes flared again.
"Another what?"
Gorm asked, against his better judgment.
"You can't really tell. Could be a man, could be a shadowkin. Don't matter. They're off to meet the master."
"That's people dying?"
Laruna stared at the crimson light.
"Just one," said the man. "Oop, and another, and there's another."
"But
there goes another,"
said the man, flashing a grin that displayed as many gaps as teeth.
"Name's Ignatius, a humble priest of Mordo Og at your service."
"Gorm Ingerson, ever hear of an orc named Magrash?"
Old one of each. Of course I know him. Oop, we got a fighter.
The lights in the shrine were glowing steadily, becoming more crimson with each passing second.
Sometimes they don't want to go wherever it is they're off to, said Ignatius with a chuckle. They try to fight old Mordo Og. He don't much care for that, does he? There it goes.
The lights winked out. A moment later, they resumed their irregular flashing.
I can see why this square is so empty, said Niln.
You were saying, Gorm prompted Ignatius, about Megrash?
In between particularly interesting flashes from the shrine's eyes, Ignatius informed the heroes that one of each Megrash was generally to be found at Moira's, a tavern just outside Sculpin Down's west gate. Gorm thanked the priest, and the heroes hurried from the square. Moira's was marked by a simple sign painted with a white tree. Inside, the fire hissed and crackled as it died in the heap of bricks that had once been a fireplace. Several figures were bent over lonely tables, nursing beers and drowning sorrows. Gorm and the other heroes sat at a big table in the back corner and ordered a round of drinks and an assortment of breads, cheeses, and dried meats. Gorm taught Gleebec the proper way to make a sandwich, which is to ensure that the meat is thicker than the bread. Caitha and Laruna compared wines and found them both lacking. The atmosphere was lackluster and the food worse, but the heroes were enjoying themselves nonetheless, glad to be done with training for the day. Haraldin, however, found a thrones board and started setting up a game between himself and Geist. I think you'll find that I've some new tricks, my friend. Your move first this time. Geist glanced at Haraldin, advanced a bannerman, and turned back to staring into the center of the room.
"Haven't you had enough of that game?" asked Laruna.
"I'll be finished once I've tasted victory," said the bard, advancing his own piece. "I think tonight is my night. I've figured out the trick."
"Oh?"
asked Niln. "Yes. In Thrones, if you move atop an enemy piece, you kill it, but if you leave it only one safe move, it becomes your own. At first I thought I should just steal all the pieces I could, but that left me with too few moves, and Geist just took them back. So I killed all the pieces I could, but clearing the board gave him enough maneuverability to steal my pieces. The trick is knowing when to steal a piece and when to go for the kill."
"Seems like you're learning something after all," said Gorm.
"I'll have you know I pick things up rather quickly. If I do say... if I... I..." Haraldin trailed off as Geist advanced a knight.
"All right, why would you move there? What are you doing now? How does that even make sense?"
Geist's stoicism had a hint of smugness about it. It was more than a little amusing to watch the bard learn his place, but Gorm was here on business. He looked around the tavern. A few orcs stood about the bar, green-skinned and square-jawed, and Gorm quickly saw that one of them was Megrash himself. It was hard to misidentify one of each Megrash, a wrinkled, gray-haired orc with an eye patch that kept slipping because one of his ears was missing. Only one tusk protruded from his lower jaw. His left hand was a metal hook. His right leg ended in a peg.
"I found my source," Gorm told the other heroes. "I'll be back."
"Look who's splitting the party," said Caitha, "and I thought you were pro."
"Ha, right," grinned Gorm.
"What are you talking about?" asked Niln. "Is there some sort of problem?"
"No, no," said Gorm. "I ain't splitting the party. She's making a joke, lad."
"So splitting the party is bad, then," said Niln.
"You never split the party," said Laruna.
"It's right in the Heroes Guild handbook," said Jin.
"Someone always wanders off to grab something shiny, or test a lever, or something, and the next thing you know they're coming back with some horrible monster following them," said Caitha.
"Usually when you're in the middle of a massive fight with something else," said Gorm.
"If they come back at all," said Haraldin.
"I remember in the tomb of the Horortep, a rogue snuck off to grab a statue he saw, and wound up sprinting back with 3 stone golem guardians on his heels while we were trying to get over a pit trap," said Caitha. "Lucky for us, the pit was deep, and golems have poor balance."
"I got a story that will top that one when I get back," Gorm laughed.
He made his way across the bar. The air was thick with smoke from the back kitchen. The orc's one good eye was filled with mistrust and apprehension as Gorm approached.
"You one of each Megrash?"
"If I wasn't, that'd be a good name for me," said Megrash. "Who wants to know?"
Nobody in particular, said Gorm.
He dropped a coin purse on the table as he sat down.
Just someone looking for information.
Magrash looked back at the table where Katha and the others were laughing at some story or another.
I don't want no business with heroes, he said. Look, you can see I got more than enough muscle back there to get my answers, said Gorm. But doing things that way means paperwork and guild reviews and all sorts of other hassles. I'd much rather you take this here 30 Gilton, answer a few questions, and get back to drinking. But it's your choice.
Magrash further scrutinized the party.
You got a goblin with you.
That's me squire.
You the one who sent the elven guardsmen to the healers?
He didn't go to... How did you hear about that?
It's all over the city. Is it true that you did it because he insulted the goblin?
Look, I don't need that getting around, not any more than it is.
Magrash's demeanor warmed noticeably.
What do you want to know?
I'm looking for info on the Leviathan Project.
Surprise flashed in Magrash's eye, but he recovered quickly.
Let's talk outside, he said, nodding toward the door.
The alley out back of Moira's was illuminated only by the full moon. A light flared in the darkness as Magrash lit a cigarette.
People hear you talking about the Leviathan Project to me, and I'm going to get my non-combatant papers revoked,
said Magrash.
Why?
You can't be an NPC if you used to work for a villain, said Magrash. Run around with a bloodthirsty war band of shadow folk all you like, and they'll take you with open arms. But lift some boxes for a lightling that's gone foe, and 25 years later you're still unclean. Oh, hang on.
Magrash hobbled over to Moira's back door and stomped on a thick, meaty tentacle. Something beneath them shrieked in displeasure as the rubbery appendage retreated through a sewer grate.
Thrice cursed krakens, Magrash grumbled as he hobbled back. Sure, they're cute when they're the size of your hand and they'll sit on the shoulder, but people always dump them down the sewer once they start going after cats. And then who do you suppose has to deal with them? The lowly sewer worker, that's who.
There's more than one of them in the sewers? Gorm asked.
There's far more and far worse than those watching from the water, said Magrash. Heroes clean the sewers out every few years, but new critters come up from the depths or down from the top all the time. Still, monsters are better than taxpayers, right?
Sorry?
Both will try to squeeze the life out of you, but you can take an axe to the monsters. Ha ha! Sorry. Little civil servant humor there. What were you talking about?
I didn't know the Leviathan Project was run by a villain.
Not just one. All the big wizards from back then. Datar Armayan, Telder of Umbrax, Aya of Blades, Windcinder, Azanon.
Azanon the Spider King?
A chill ran up Gorm's spine at the thought of the dark wizard who had ended his career.
Well, they called him Azanon the Black back then, said Magrash. It was before his trip to Nagarok, where he was just one of the five on the Leviathan Project, or so I hear.
You didn't work on the project then?
No. Had a brother who was on it, working for Datar Armayan. He'd tell me about it and try to recruit me. Back then I was a warrior with my tribe, and we raided the Lightling towns from the Eben Crags down to Knife Vale.
So, can I talk to your brother? Said Gorm.
Magrash shook his head with a sigh.
He got killed. Was on the first floor of the tower when Johan the High and Mighty came to chop off Datar's head. Bloody Hero didn't even care about the Leviathan business either. He only wanted that fat queen of yours to marry Handor instead of Datar's boy. I figured it was only a matter of time before the heroes came from my tribe, too. Put in for my non-combatant papers the next day. Thought I'd be safer.
Magrash gave a dark, mirthless laugh.
See how well that turned out. I was just one eye Magrash before I started working the sewers.
Know anyone I could talk to who worked on the Leviathan Project? Gorm asked.
I can give you a name, but if it gets out he was on the project, both he and I are as good as hung.
Gorm nodded. For NPCs, guilt by association was a capital offense.
Head to Bloodroot,
whispered Magrash.
Bloodroot?
It's a town up by the border with Ruskin, old beet farming village. It used to be called the Baitwolds, till a tribe of NPC orcs took it over. Look for Gabrang, he's your orc.
I may do that, said Gorm, hoping he'd never have to. Any chance you know anything about how the elven marbles got wrapped up in all of this?
Magrash snorted.
The stolen burial stones?
I don't know what they'd have to do with Project Leviathan. The Noctomancers collected a lot of random stuff for the project. Why?
They were stolen. Again. We're on a fetch quest for them.
I did hear they went missing on the road from Scoria. Usually that's a very safe road.
You know something else?
Magrash considered Gorm carefully.
Not for sure, but I did hear that a band of lizard men drove some Omnimancers out of an old tower out by the Sudden River a couple of weeks ago. That's just a few days off the road to Scoria. Sounds like something they could have done.
Probably coincidence, said Gorm.
Could be, said Magrash, but a lead's a lead.
Gorm tossed the Gilton to the orc with a word of thanks. His mind raced as he headed back into the tavern. He'd never suspected a connection between Datar and Azanon, aside from the hero who slew them, but apparently they had collaborated with the most evil wizards of their time for art theft. And now someone else wanted the stones, though all of the wizards that Magrash had mentioned were long dead. Was someone starting the Leviathan Project again? Would that even matter? For all Gorm knew, the project was an underground museum putting orcish relics on exhibit. The other heroes were still comparing tales of past quests when Gorm sat down at the table.
I'd blasted both of his legs and one of his arms off, and we planned to just leave him, right? Laruna was saying. So we started to head out, and the crazy blighter starts trueforming.
What's trueforming? Niln asked amid the heroes' laughter.
Oh, you think you've defeated me? Mimicked Katha, but now let me show you my true form, har, har, har. For some reason, I let you break my human body and trash half of my lair before I really started fighting. Bwa-ha-ha, said Laruna. Gods, it's annoying.
So what happened? Asked Niln, interrupting the hero's mirth.
What?
Asked Laruna, wiping a tear from her eye.
With the warlord in the volcano. What happened when he true-formed?
Laruna looked uncomfortable.
He turned into a two-story-tall demonic slug, ate our rogue and our priestess, and crippled our fighter before we put him down.
The laughter at the table withered into an awkward silence.
That's horrible, said Niln eventually.
That's professional heroics, said Gorm darkly. Kill and loot until you're killed and looted.
Yes, well, it's risky, but the work we do is important, said Katha.
We're keeping the world safe, said Heraldin.
Are we now? Asked Jin. It seems to me the dwarf had the right of it. In the end, this is all about gold.
It's about keeping citizens safe, said Laruna.
Then why is the Mirewood infested? Why isn't the Underdim cleared? Asked Jin. Why is nobody killing the impoverished monsters? Because it's for the gold.
The horrible silence returned, leaving each hero to think of the implications of the wizard's words. Gorm shook his head.
Wasn't always this way. I took me first jobs for free. Me master in the Brotherhood was a hero, and he worked for almost nothing. Saved a whole city for supper once. Things should, if they could just go back to the way they was.
He trailed off into silence.
They can't, said Jin. Surely you're familiar with our gross domestic product.
Of course I am. Why do you think I'm drinking imported?
Said Gorm, shaking his tankard at the Noctomancer.
What's that got to do with anything?
No, I mean our GDP, the total value of everything that's made or done in the Freedlands. It's a big number, but if you break it down, 4 out of every 10 Gilton are linked with professional heroics.
40% of the economy is loot? Said Katha.
Loot, or plunder funds, or weapons and armor manufacturing, or potion brewers, or inns that cater to adventurers, or hoard appraising, and so on, said the Noctomancer. There's a lot of work done and products sold to support questing heroes. If we stopped, what happens to the workers and the sellers? They'd lose everything. They'd starve in the streets.
You think it would be that bad? Said Laruna.
Is there a good way to be bankrupt? Said Jin.
Morally, suggested Heraldin.
Professional heroes defend a portion of the populace from poverty at the expense of other parts of it, said Jin.
That's not why we're here, said Niln.
Well, I'm here because your mercenaries strong-armed me into joining the guild. I'd never have been a bloody hero otherwise.
Everyone stared in shock at Jin's forthrightness. Gaist gently took the wizard's tankard away.
Sorry, mumbled Jin, but you know it's true.
Doubt was creeping into the heroes' faces. Even Niln was faltering. Gorm could feel them slipping off course.
Well, it don't have to be, Gorm said. It don't matter how we got here or what the whole economy is doing with gross products or anything. What matters is what we do and why we do it. Maybe we can't save the world, but maybe we'll make the world a tiny bit better.
He could see a spark of hope returning to the other heroes. He nodded to Niln.
Oh, right, said Niln. I know we didn't meet under the best circumstances, but I know we are a part of something bigger than a few gold coins, bigger than any of us. We can accomplish great things, my friends.
Gorm raised his tankard.
To saving the world!
The other heroes raised their drinks as well, and toasted to heroic deeds, and a measure of mirth and happiness returned as they drank. Gorm drank as well, and smiled and laughed with them, but the joy didn't return for him. All he could think of was why he was really on this quest, for the money, and for the fame, and for the past he so desperately wanted to bring back. Poldo stood a few feet from the table, clutching a packet of charts and drawings. He absently fidgeted with his spectacles and groomed his mustache. He was always nervous when meeting with Mr. Goldson and Mr. Baggs, but they weren't the only important figures sitting at the table a few feet away. King Handor sat at the table, flanked by Johan the Mighty, the champion of Tandos, and Weaver Ortson, the Grand Master and High Counselor of the Heroes Guild. The dinner was ostensibly a casual evening wherein the king was hosting some old friends. They sat in comfortable leather chairs before a cozy fire in an old study high in Castle Anderon. While the meal was certainly informal, Poldo noted that conversation turned to business before the end of the soup course.
"We have heard that Your Majesty was considering a tax on loot by professional heroes," Baggs said with a disarming smile. "If by considering it you mean I'm days from enacting it, then yes," said Handor.
"But sire," Goldson said, "surely that will jeopardize much of the prosperity we've all worked so hard for. Poldo, the charts, if you will."
Poldo stepped forward.
"Save your charts," said the king. "I've seen plenty of charts."
Poldo stepped back. "Tax revenues from professional heroics are down by a tenth," Handor said frankly. "And the rebuilding costs for collateral damage caused by monsters and questing heroes are up by a quarter. The kingdom's coffers can't take it." Baggs intervened.
"Majesty, nobody benefits from the current situation."
"You seem to be handling it quite well," Johan said.
"Ah, I hear your revenues are up 7%.
6, Your Honor,"
corrected Goldson.
"I imagine that was helped by the Griffin of Whitegeld," said Handor.
"I'm sorry, Your Majesty, I'm unfamiliar with that particular quest,"
said Baggs.
"Oh? Well, I'm sure your gnome has a chart for that. Right, Scribgin? Do you have anything on the Griffin of Whitegeld?"
Poldo stepped forward.
"That won't be necessary, Poldo," snapped Goldson. "I do recall something of the case, Your Majesty."
Poldo stepped back.
"Let me refresh your memory," said the king. "Adventure Capital estimated the Griffin's hoard to be worth more than 100,000 gilton, and investors spent over 80,000 for the rights to its loot. And when your heroes put the beast down last week, it had nothing but a broken shield and some beads. The whole quest brought in 87 gilton, and that only after the carcass was sold to a tannery."
"Sire," Goldson attempted,
but Handor could not be stopped mid-charge.
"The city-state of Whitegeld pocketed 60,000 gilton. Adventure Capital walked off with 20,000 more in fees, and investors got back 87 gilton. The Royal Guard's pension had invested huge sums of gold in the project and walked away with half a week's wages. Now old Gwyn has to work for another 2 years."
The king pointed to a leathery bannerman in rusted armor that rattled with each geriatric shake. Goldson and Bags wrestled their faces into a reasonable facsimile of empathy and nodded at the old soldier.
"Your Majesty, we're aware of current hardships, and we're sorry for the losses," said Bags. "But everyone involved understands that risk is inherent in the system. We all would have shared in the gains, and sadly we all must share in the loss. Recall that our business had to hire 6 heroes," continued Goldson, "equip them with expensive magical gear, and pay a portion of the death benefit for the 2 who gave their lives slaying the griffin. It's a considerable expense."
"Ah, yes, that," said the king. "Mr. Ortson, can you tell me how much adventure capital paid in expenses for the quest to slay the griffin of Whitegeld?"
Weaver Ortson was caught with a mouthful of bread and soup dribbling through his straggly beard.
"Ahem, yes," he said, swallowing and using a napkin. I believe it was 15,102 gilden, Your Majesty."
"Thank you, Mr. Ortson," said Handor.
"And worth every copper, Your Majesty," said Ortson. "Our heroes are putting their lives on the line every day for the sake of the kingdom and its citizens."
"Yes, thank you, Weaver. We're all familiar with the Heroes Guild," said the king. "Now then, Mr. Goldson, 20,000 in fees minus expenses sounds like almost 5,000 gilton in profit to me, which is quite above what one would expect for a quest that cost investors tens of thousands."
"Sire, please," Bags protested. "Remember that we were projecting a much larger hoard, which would have allowed us a share of the net loot." "Meaning that our profits were about a fifth of what we expected, Your Grace," pressed Goldson hurriedly. "That drives our stock price down, making our company, as a whole, worth less."
"Which is just as bad as a loss," said Bags.
"Perhaps even worse," finished Goldson.
"Nearly," said the king, with pointed doubt. "Regardless, in recent years you've profited from the public's gold. The only hordes that have met your projections have belonged to monsters that ransacked city-states and towns, and those are the very beasts that burdened kingdom coffers with heavy repair bills."
"If that is the case, sire, taxing loot will hardly fix the problem," said Goldson. "You could have covered the expenses for damage that way years ago, but not in today's adventuring climate," agreed Bags. "Poldo, if you'd bring the charts."
Poldo stepped forward. "There's no need for that. I think we all know that loot isn't what it used to be," said Handor. Poldo stepped back. "And that's precisely why I also plan to tax profits from the sale of looting rights." The little color that remained in Goldson's face drained away.
"Sire, that would be disastrous."
"Would it?" Handor asked with a wry smile. "For whom?"
"Your Majesty, think of the consequences," wheezed Bags. "The kingdom's coffers may swell, but the losses sustained by city-states and businesses would be phenomenal. Everyone from sewer urchins to Poldo here would find their jobs in jeopardy."
Poldo nearly dropped his charts.
"The problem, sire, isn't tax policy," said Goldson. "Professional heroics have never generated revenue for the kingdom directly. Rather, heroics promote economic growth and reduce city-states' dependence on kingdom funding. The recent loot situation has just made that more difficult."
"Much more difficult," added Mr. Ortson.
"That's why our side project is so important," said Bags. "If successful, we could return professional heroics to where it was 20 years ago. We could experience that kind of growth and mutual prosperity again."
"Perhaps we should hold off instituting taxes until after we see the results of the project," suggested Goldson.
Handor pursed his lips. "The plan may fail."
"We have a contingency," said Ortson.
"The one you told me about, Johann?"
"Indeed, sire," said Johann.
The king nodded and fell back into thought.
"Speaking of which," Johann said, "I had to deal with an incident at the Elven Embassy today. One of the Almatran's 7 heroes beat the captain of the Elven Guard senseless for insulting a goblin."
Poldo wasn't sure why, but the champion's anecdote improved the mood at the table. Mr. Goldson even allowed himself a small smile. "Very well," said the king. "We shall wait until after the project to assess our tax situation."
"A wise choice, sire," said Mr. Bags.
The king turned his eyes to Poldo.
"I think I shall see those charts after all, if you please."
Poldo nodded and stepped forward.
So, the bandits were sighted north of Ebenmeyer by...
Niln paused to scan a page from the Elven Embassy's dossier.
A ranger, right?
Yes. Gorm rubbed his temples. He had hoped the High Scribe might be better at strategy than at fighting, but watching Niln try to run a meeting was downright painful. The alleged seventh hero looked like he would rather be taking a sound beating from the training golems than mired in the Almatran Temple's small conference room, floundering amid the papers and files he had scattered across the table.
But the Meyerwood is... I mean, if we didn't have to go there...
Of course we don't have to go there, snapped Haraldin impatiently. In fact, assuming we like breathing, we probably shouldn't go there. We should look anywhere else.
But the Meyerwood is where the marbles probably are, said Laruna.
Gorm really didn't want to intervene. A party of heroes needed a clear choice of leadership. Any sign of split authority or divided loyalties could send a quest spiraling into constant bickering about the best course of action, the best strategy for combat, or even the best tavern for the evening meal. That bickering could quickly descend into open fighting, and eventually inter-party violence. Gorm had seen it happen in too many parties. No, the party needed to have one leader, and given that Niln held the purse strings, the contracts, and the backing of the Heroes Guild, it was best for that leader to be the High Scribe. Still, taking charge of a situation didn't seem to be Niln's strong suit.
There's also the tip about the Leviathan Project with the orcs, said Niln.
We don't want to spend a lot of time on false leads, said Caitha.
I'd rather spend my time on any kind of lead than have it cut short in the Meyerwood, said Jin.
Then go back to hiding in your tower, rank one, sneered Laruna, prompting the meeting to degenerate into a shouting match. Excuse me, if we could just...
Niln shot Gorm the desperate look of a drowning man. Shaking his head, Gorm answered the scribe's unspoken plea.
All right, enough, he barked.
The table fell into a sullen silence as Gorm glared at each of the other heroes in turn.
Now, the way I see it, we got three leads. The elves think they know the marbles are a short ways into the Meyerwood, where we may run into a fight we can't survive. Magrash thinks they might be with some lizard men in a tower by the Sudden River. Now that's a fight for sure, but I'm hoping we can at least handle a band of lizard men. And if those ain't good enough, we might get some insight about the marbles if we dig into this so-called Leviathan Project in Bloodroot. Most of the orcs there are NPCs, so it's as safe as orcs get, which still ain't that safe.
He pushed several of the papers aside and planted his finger firmly on a map of the Freedlands.
Our best chance of finding the marbles is our most dangerous. Our safest option probably won't get us much more than their backstory. But the middle option...
He plunked a finger down on the thin blue strip that represented the Sudden River,
only takes us a day or two off course if we're headed to either the Meyerwood or Bloodroot.
So we should go there, said Niln.
If you say so,
said Gorm, sitting back and giving the priest an encouraging nod.
All right, said the High Scribe. So we'll go to the tower and then move on to the Meyerwood, right? Right? So next, we should talk about...
Preparations? Prompted Caitha.
Preparations, right, said the High Scribe. How do you think we should prepare?
All eyes turned to Gorm. He sighed, but split authority was better than no authority at all.
All right, here's what we need,